This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Laurelhurst Theater and Pub, independently owned and operated, featuring modern, independent, and classic films, microbrews, Pizzicato Pizza, and all new seating, located at East Burnside and 28th in Portland, 503-232-5511 or laurelhursttheater.com.
This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing, featuring 100% natural fiber clothing for women and men. Real clothing for real people. Proud to sponsor the important voice of KABU, Gazelle is located at Northeast 41st in Fremont and can be reached at 503-288-3422.
Good morning. My name is Ed Goldberg. I'm here with my friend and colleague,
Dawn Taylor.
Hey, Dawn, what's up?
Not much.
Okay. Just quickly, I was remiss in this morning. I forgot to bring this in, the announcement, but you should call up the Clinton Street Theater. A lot of good stuff is going on there. I don't have the number in front of me because I left the announcement at home, but they're going to be playing Beetlejuice, and they're going to be playing a concert film, which sounded very interesting. So give the Clinton Street Theater a call and check it out. We got a lot of movies to go through today. I'll start out with one I can dismiss fairly quickly. The Pink Panther, directed by Sean Levy, not our Sean Levy. Steve Martin, Kevin Kline, Jean Reno, and Beyoncé Knowles, all of whom should know better. This is it's a sad, stupid, and unnecessary remake of the original.
I'm shocked. Yeah, I'm shocked to hear that.
Yeah. Steve Martin, I don't know what he's trying to do here. I suppose it might be funny. You know, people laughed in the theater. I just sat there saying, okay, this is going to get funny any time now, isn't it? It's just, it's no good. Kevin Kline runs around. He doesn't even know what accent he's using half the time. You really expect better from him. It's like he's collecting a paycheck. Jean Reno just looked embarrassed.
As well he should. I love Jean Reno, but please.
My advice to you is go rent the original, get a pizza, drink a few beers, and stay the hell away from this one. I gave the movie a D, and the only reason I'd give it an F is, I don't know, because I laughed once or twice. So that's The Pink Panther, and it blows. Dawn, tell us about Illusion.
I just say they're not going to be using you as a blurb on the DVD box.
I hope it blows.
Ed Volkberg. Yeah. Illusion is a film that stars Kirk Douglas. He made this a few years ago when he was somewhere between 86 and 88 years old, as a dying film director who is lying on his deathbed. He's giving one last interview about his career, and then he sort of phases out, and he is visited by his favorite editor from 30 years previous, who also died 30 years ago, who takes him to a magical movie theater and shows him three reels of the story of his son's life, the son that he abandoned 30 years earlier when the kid was a mere tot. And so we alternately follow the story of this boy, played by writer, director, and star Michael Gurjan, who is a teenager who falls in love, and then he's a gothy, pretentious art twit, and then he's an older guy doing
jailbird
guy.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much what the movie's about. And it wants to be sort of fantastic and magical realism sort of a thing, and what it really ends up being is this kind of pastiche of It's a Wonderful Life and all kinds of sort of self-indulgent indie art movie things, where he crams all of this stuff into the film that just clutters it up with, you know, the jabs at the pretentious art scene and allusions to Romeo and Juliet and a stalkerish boyfriend played by Ted Raimi, of all people, who chases the couple through the cemetery in the rain and tragedy ensues. And meanwhile, this is all intercut with Kirk Douglas, I find it kind of painful to watch the post-stroke Kirk Douglas. But of course, he is playing a man who is extremely infirm and dying. But sitting in the movie theater and watching these things happening and saying, don't say that to her, or if I was there, I'd give him better advice. And wait, he's got a knife. And it's really annoying, frankly, intercut with long, long, long post-stroke Kirk Douglas monologues where he talks about the nature of his life. I alternately really liked this movie and hated this movie. And one of the reasons I hated this movie was because the things I liked a lot. There were little bits of really good movie in here. But the movie as a whole is so messy and disjointed and sort of poorly done and self-indulgent. And the Gurjan, ironically, the fellow who wrote and directed this, is badly cast as the main character in his own movie.
Yes,
he's
right.
Sort of blandly inscrutable most of the time, and you can't really tell what he's thinking or why he's doing things like that. I give this movie a C-, and I would actually probably give it a lower grade, except for the fact that there were intriguing things in the film that I liked, but not enough to make me embrace it.
Yeah, well, I saw this more as a hapless rewrite of Christmas Carol, where instead of spirits, you get snippets of film from his son's life, you know? And you can see the Kirk Douglas character change with each spirit, each visitation from the spirit. I agree with pretty much everything you said, except the thing that saved this movie for me, besides the little tiny bits that you like as you go through the film, was Kirk Douglas.
Mm.
Here's a guy who's had a stroke. His speech is slurred. He's 86, 87 years old, and he gives a fierce Kirk Douglas performance.
Oh, he's still a powerful, powerful
incredible.
Actor.
Incredible. This guy, yes. This guy sweats more acting ability than the whole rest of the cast, you know, can put together on a good day. I was fascinated watching Kirk Douglas through this whole movie, and I could see all the way back to Champion. I could see all the way back to Spartacus. This is the same Kirk Douglas, only he's old and he doesn't speak so good anymore. I give the movie a B-, and the reason I kicked it up as high as that is strictly based on Kirk Douglas's performance.
Yeah, but unfortunately, that's one of the things I found so frustrating. Is I would have liked to have seen him give this performance with better material to work with.
Oh yeah, the guy's a movie star. He's even at that reduced aspect. He's a movie star. So that was Illusion. Gee whiz, go from the ridiculous to the sublime. This is Heart of Gold. This is Jonathan Demme's concert film of Neil Young, starring Neil Young, Emmylou Harris, and a cast of great musicians and backup singers. Demme makes the best concert films, period. He made Stop Making Sense, which was the Talking Heads film. How many years ago now?
Oh,
20 years ago?
Gosh, yeah, 20 years ago.
It's still one of the best concert films ever made, and this one falls right in there. Neil Young with this quavery, idiosyncratic voice, longing and yearning. I mean, of all the voices I've ever heard, nobody yearns more than Neil Young does. It's a very plaintive voice, and he's still writing great songs. A lot of the fire is gone. He's not as angry as he used to be, so all of his songs now are about loss and longing.
Most of us aren't, really, except for you.
Huh?
Most of us aren't as angry as we used to be, except for you.
Me? I'm not that angry anymore. Believe me, I'm not that angry anymore. He has a great band of old hippie musicians and a couple of country guys. He's got a great chorus of backup singers, including Emmylou Harris and his wife, Peggy. If you're a Neil Young fan, you must see this movie. If you're always wondering what the hell the story of Neil, you know, what's the big deal with Neil Young, this movie might begin to explain it. He is... Of all the rock and rollers over all the years, he's one of the few who has never sold out. This guy has his personal integrity, and in rock and roll, that's a really interesting kind of quantity to have. I gave the movie an A-. If you're a dyed-in-the-wool Neil Young fan, it's an A+. I didn't want to kick it up into the A+ category, but it's called Neil Young, Heart of Gold, and I suggest that you go see it. Art School Confidential.
Art School Confidential is the latest film directed by Terry Zwigoff, who did Ghost World and Crumb.
Oh, no, I'm sorry I missed it.
Written by Daniel Klaus, who also wrote Ghost World. And, Terry Zwigoff also did the wonderful Bad Santa as well, which is one of my favorites. It's a story about a young man named Jerome, played by Max Minghella, who goes to art school. And it's much of the film is basically taken up in his... falling head over heels for a lovely model in the life drawing classes. The rest, a larger chunk of it is taken up with just taking huge swathy stabs at art school types. Then there's also a little bit of kind of a mystery involved in that there's a serial killer, the Swarthmore Strangler. The school is called Swarthmore, which is sort of funny because Swarthmore is a line of art supplies. So that in itself is a joke. And so trying to figure out who the serial killer is. But mostly it's invested in making fun of art school types, which one friend of his that he makes in school is the perpetual student, the guy who is always a freshman because he always drops out before the end of the year and then re-registers the next semester and starts all over again. And he points out all the types and says, well, there's the vegan hippie, there's the angry lesbian, there's the pretentious git who can't shut up in class. And I actually went to art school, and I can tell you, these types are dead on. You know, the soccer mom in your painting class who's now an empty nester and has nothing better to do but take art classes. The crazy girls that you don't want to date, the crazy art school girls that fly into hysterics and depression for no reason whatsoever and dress all in black. And it's the thing is that if you haven't gone to art school, you might not appreciate the types. John Malkovich is the pretentious teacher who is more interested in getting his own show hung in a gallery than what's going on with his students. There's Jim Broadbent is in it, and he's wonderful as an ex-artist who had been a student there, who is now just a burnt-out drunk and has nothing but just scathing insults and bile. But you see, his art is brilliant. So I really enjoyed it quite a lot. But those not familiar with the atmosphere of the actual art school might find the characters to be a little bit broad. I gave it a B. I enjoyed it very, very much. It's a little bit disjointed. It's not as good as some of the other stuff like Ghost World, but definitely if you've enjoyed those other films that they've made together, check it out.
One quick question. Is this hitting a gnat with a sledgehammer?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes. It's very broad, very big.
All right. The next one is Crazy. This is a film festival film. It's crazy with periods, you know, between each letter. Turns out that's the names of the children in this family that spell out crazy.
Mm.
Very, very droll, don't you think? It's French-Canadian. It's in French with subtitles, mostly in French. It's a little English in it. This is a coming out while coming of age in a French-Canadian family. One of the sons is the arty, rebellious one. The oldest son is just a doper biker, and he's the real black sheep of the family. But this kid that the film focuses on, this is about like 20 years of his life, and it's set in the 70s and the 80s, and all the hair and the music and the clothes, you know, fit the time. So that was kind of fun to see. But the whole thing was really pretty trite, and maybe this is still a big issue in Catholic French Canada, but these kind of films are about 20 years out of date in this country, where we're into Brokeback Mountain. I mean, let's face it, we've moved beyond this kind of a thing. That doesn't mean it's bad. It's actually, you know, not hard to watch, but it's, you don't really need to go to the theater to see it. If it comes out on video, that's perfectly okay. And I will say that this kid's inner conflicts, it takes longer for him to come out than the century plant. You know, this kid just he keeps denying it and going out with girls and, you know, denying it, and all the while he keeps admitting to himself that he's attracted to boys. And it just, after a while, you begin to say, come on, kid, fish or cut bait, you know. So it's called Crazy. I give it a C+. Wait for the video.
And note to any Canadians listening, it's the coming out movies, old news. It's time for gay Canuck cowboy movies.
That's right, yes, because this is, as they say in French, merde. No, not really. It's not that bad. Okay, tell us about Lucky Number 11.
Lucky Number 11 is directed by, I believe it's pronounced Paul McGuinn. He's Scottish. It's got a G in the middle of it, so I'm probably not pronouncing it correctly. The director previously of Gangster Number 1, which was an intriguing but messy film with Malcolm McDowell, and Wicker Park, which was a terrible, terrible movie starring Josh Hartnett. This movie also stars Josh Hartnett, which right there is kind of a point against it. And it's a sort of black comic thriller caper movie, in which Josh Hartnett is a young man who is the victim of mistaken identity, which gets him involved with assassinations that are being plotted by two of New York City's biggest crime bosses against each other. One is called simply The Boss, played by Morgan Freeman. The other is called the Rabbi, and he's played by Ben Kingsley. Also mixed up in this is a hired assassin who is sort of engineering all of this behind the scenes, named Mr. Goodcat, played by Bruce Willis. And there's a police detective who is watching all of this and trying to figure out what's going on, played by Stanley Tucci. Also, a love interest, across the hall from him, played by Lucy Liu. Excellent cast. Excellent, excellent cast. The problem is that the movie just isn't very good. It's one of those films where it's all hinging on a secret that will be revealed at the end of the film that will make everything, you supposedly go, aha, that's why all of this is happening. Unfortunately, it's one of those secrets that if you have two brain cells to rub together, you can figure out about 10 minutes into the movie. So you just keep waiting for everybody else to figure it out, too. It wants to be a very twisty, turny, full of surprises kind of suspense movie, and it's not very suspenseful. It wants to be darkly funny, and it's not very funny. It just is a movie that falls flat in every single way, and it's hard to explain why. It's just a movie that you sit there and you, it wants very much to be something that it just can't quite achieve. And that's really all I have to say about it. It's got an excellent cast. I'd say that if you love those actors, it's certainly worth picking up as a rental when it comes out on DVD, but not something that you really want to spend full price for and sit in a theater through, because it's just sort of tedious and not funny and not suspenseful and not nearly as clever as it thinks it is. This is a movie that's repeatedly, the film itself is upstaged by its own art direction, where everyone's apartment building has fabulously retro 70s wallpaper, and everybody's clothes are just kind of kicky and weird and quirky, and every scene you go, wow, look at that wallpaper, while the dialogue is just tedious and flat. So I give it a C, but honestly, if you want to see Ben Kingsley and Stanley Tucci and Bruce Willis, you know, pick it up from Netflix later when it comes out.
Okay, so that's lucky number 11. It's another film festival film called Mutual Appreciation. Talking about tedious, this not only is this movie boring and tedious, but it's murky. It looks like it's shot with where they forgot to turn on the lights. You know, it looks terrible. If you can imagine Woody Allen as a 20-something slacker hipster with zero talent, he could make this movie.
I cannot imagine that.
It's the only thing good about this movie is that the acting is incredibly naturalistic. This really looks like you're just looking in on a bunch of people talking. And I don't know how the director's name is Andrew Bujalski. I don't know how he achieved that. But the thing is, what they're saying is so dull. I mean, an average night in your house with your friends coming over to drink some wine and shoot the crap is far more interesting than any of this.
Well, at my house, yes.
I don't care who you are. All of your friends are more interesting than these people are. This kid comes to New York to be a musician, and he runs into all these arty types, and he has old friends from high school, and he winds up, you know, sleeping with his best friend's girl, and it's just avoid this movie like the plague. I give it a D plus, and the only reason I give it a plus is because the acting was really quite interesting. But unless you're in acting school and you must see every form of acting there is, stay away from Mutual Appreciation completely. Tell us about Eight Below.
Oh, I'll do it quickly. Below, a Disney movie about a man played by Paul Walker, who we remember as being a big slab of wood from Fast and Furious and such. He's an expedition guide, has a bunch of sled dogs, has to evacuate an injured scientist played by Bruce Greenwood from their Antarctic research station and leave the dogs behind. He spends the rest of the movie moping and doing paperwork in an attempt to get back to save the dogs, which is very, very, very dull. Meanwhile, it's intercut with more interesting scenes of the dogs surviving and interacting in the frozen tundra in ways that are completely unbelievable as far as dog behavior is concerned. Like, you know, they're starving to death, but one dog gives its food to another dog to show respect.
I've had two dogs at the same time.
Yeah,
I've seen that.
That'll happen.
Yeah, right.
But as far as like being one of those sort of semi-realistic Disney live-action animal movies like we all enjoyed back in the Charlie the Lonesome Cougar days, the stuff with the dogs is actually very interesting, and any one of those dogs is a better actor than Paul Walker. But then, you know, so is my sock. So it's he's got the obligatory funny sidekick played by Jason Biggs. He's got the obligatory love interest slash helicopter pilot played by a beautiful actress named Moon Bloodgood, who is just absolutely lovely and very good. And I'd like to see her in some other things. If you have kids or they will probably love this. If you are able to suspend disbelief as far as animal behavior is concerned, you might find yourself wiping away a tear and enjoy this film quite a lot. I give it a B for the dog stuff. I give it a C- for the Paul Walker sections. If honestly, this movie is about a half an hour longer than it needs to be, and you could just cut out almost everything having to do with Paul Walker and have a much better movie.
Fast forward through it. Huh?
Yeah. If you get it on DVD, just go straight to the dog scene.
Okay, that was 8 Below. I got to go through these next few movies pretty quickly. The Notorious Betty Page, a film festival film, which will be in wide release later on, directed by Mary Harron, starring Gretchen Mol and a lot of other people. This is Betty Page was the pinup queen of the 50s, but it was in a specific area. It was bondage, lingerie, that kind of thing, which was considered very risque, obscene and pornographic, actually, in the 50s. As a movie, it's a little bit too worshipful and naive about the character of Betty Page, but Gretchen Mol is just terrific. She does a really wonderful job, and she looks frighteningly like Betty Page. And the production of the film is great. The film stock, or however they deal with it, it's in black and white and 1950s style, grainy black and white. Some scenes take place in Miami. They're in color. They have the bright, garish color that used to be like on postcards from Florida. This really is an enjoyable little film. And as, you know, Good Night and Good Luck is a window into the uptight 50s. This is at least as good a window into the uptight 50s as Good Night and Good Luck was. I like this movie. It's not a great film, but it's really, I found it very enjoyable. I'm not an expert in Betty Page, and I'm willing to believe much of what the film told me. But, hey, I thought it was fun. I gave it a B+. Tristram Shandy, A Cock and Bull Story, directed by Michael Winterbottom, starring Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon primarily. It's a big, big cast. Very entertaining film, very self-referential and hip. What do they call it? Postmodern or, meta movie, you know, that kind
of
thing.
Well, interestingly, Tristram Shandy, the novel, was sort of postmodern itself.
That's what they say. I've never read it because Lawrence Stern was not on my reading list. But this... It's a movie about making a film of Tristram Shandy. It might not be interesting to everyone in that sense, but the dialogue and the interactions and the cast relationships really, really are fun. All of the stuff going on between Coogan and Brydon is great. It almost looks improvised, and in fact it might be. These are just two guys zinging each other. They're each egomaniac, shallow people. And it's just a contest to see who's the lowest of the two of them by the time the film is over.
They're basically playing heightened versions of themselves too, because
exactly
they're both fairly famous comedians.
And I'm guessing that they're friends, because these are guys who've worked together before. I kind of like this movie. I gave it a B+, and I think it's worth seeing. Three Burials of Melquiades Estrada, Tommy Lee Jones direction. I reviewed this a while ago, but it's taken a while for it to come out. A very, very passionate story, complicated relations between Texans and the Mexican hired help. It's the irony is laid on a bit thick here. This guy is dug up and buried twice, three times. The first time he's not dug up. But,
hence the name.
But it looks to me like Tommy Lee Jones has been rummaging around in John Sayles' trash can for a story. This is like low-level John Sayles. The acting is good, mostly. The Barry Pepper as a bigoted border guard is really terrific. It's not hard to sit through. You just want it to be better. You're looking there and you're saying, wow, this should really be better than it is. Gave it a B-, but I still think it might be worth seeing. Okay, down to two more here.
Go, Ed, go.
Yeah,
go,
The Keeper, Ed, The Legend of Omar Khayyam. This is going to be at the Hollywood Theater. It's directed by a guy named Kaivan Mashayekh. Excuse me, I think I've gotten that right.
I got a little something on my head.
Yeah, really. I'm sorry, I'll pass out towels next time. It's got a big cast, and they've even got great cameos from Vanessa Redgrave and Diane Baker. It basically takes place in modern times. It's an Iranian-American family with ties to the old country. And one of the brothers is dying of leukemia, and he is the keeper, the one who tells the family stories. And one of the stories that they like to keep is the legend of Omar Khayyam. And he is telling it to his youngest brother, a kid about 12, but then he dies in the middle. So the kid takes off for Iran so he can hear his grandfather, who's also dying in bed, tell the rest of the story. So you get the legend of Omar Khayyam stuff, and you get the modern stuff. All the modern stuff is kind of trite and greeting card, Hallmark card stuff. The Omar Khayyam stuff is fun. I kind of like that a lot more. The writing is really uneven. The production and acting is really uneven, but this is not a film without interest. And, I think it's worth seeing based on that. This is really, really an independent film. And I suppose for an independent film, the production values aren't bad. Again, it's called The Keeper, The Legend of Omar Khayyam. I gave it a B minus. You might like it a little more than I did. Now we're down to the Cinema Project, which has an evening of Robert Todd films. Robert Todd is a filmmaker who is known for his little independent films. Most of these films are short. The longest one is only 47 minutes long, and then there are two much shorter. The long one is called In Loving Memory. It's about being on death row, basically. I don't want to say any more than that because there's a little bit of a twist in it that you might find a surprise. But Todd's thing is to contrast beautiful scenes of nature with awful places like, you know, prisons, state prisons and death rows. That's pretty much what he does in all of his films, is this contrast between the natural and the manufactured. And he likes the natural and he doesn't like the manufactured.
Oh, okay. I know this, I get
is
it.
This is radical and it might not go down too well, but for
Trees
example,
good, oil tankers bad.
Very exactly right. So Evergreen is exactly about that. It starts out with, you know, scenes of fields and birds singing, and then it winds up in a container port. You know, with big containers being moved around and lots of bad, ugly noises. This all takes place on March 7th and 8th, 922 Southeast Ankeny. There is a suggested donation. Again, Robert Todd, an accomplished filmmaker, has made 20 films since 1990, and he's also a painter and a teacher and a film editor in the Boston area. We will not be on next time. We're being preempted for International Women's Day.
Sisterhood.
Yeah, the cable movie talk at yahoo.com. Gee whiz, we don't even have time to run through the movies. Sorry about that. We'll see you in a month.
Bye.
Benefit for Village School Foundation. Experience Vietnamese culture through music and dance featuring nationally known guitarist and storyteller Dun. Enjoy Vietnamese food and a special video presentation of the Village School Foundation's recent efforts to provide education resources to the children of Vietnam. The event will be held at 6:30 p.m. Saturday, February 25th at the PCC Rock Creek Campus, Building Number 3. For more information, please call 503-957-0740 or 503-997-2260.
KBOO Community Radio has an immediate opening for an interim membership coordinator. This is a temporary position lasting for a period of 90 days. The position will be responsible for the oversight of the membership drive and various other duties. For a complete job announcement, please visit our site online at www.kboo.fm. The position closes Friday, February 24th at 5 p.m.
Coming right up is Speaking of Animals. The topic is wolf hunting, and Lori will speak with Priscilla Farrell of Friends of Animals about a battle in Alaska over wolf hunting and wolf control. At 10 on People Rise Up, Andrew Geller interviews geologist Kenneth DeFays about global oil production and the impact of its peak. He has recently authored Hubbert's Peak and Beyond Oil, The View from Hubbert's Peak. At 10:30 on Making Contact, Dr. Carol Anderson, author of Eyes Off the Prize, The United Nations and the African American Struggle for Human Rights, talks about the deep discrepancy at the heart of America's struggle for civil rights and human rights. And at 11 on Democracy Now, Al Jazeera reporters give their account of the U.S. siege of Fallujah in April of 2004. You're listening to Community Radio, KABU.
Choosing sights, choosing sights. Man, I hate to be choosing, choosing sights. But I'm choosing sights. My side is the wild side. Lord, I wish I didn't have to be choosing.